All right, welcome back to the Let's Ride podcast. I'm sure our guests are not going to be happy about the name of the podcast. I don't know if Coach Bellina knows where that comes from, but we were just reminiscing about some old battles that we'll probably get into here. But we are very excited to have Coach Bellina and Joey, the number one recruit in the senior class, on for this episode. So tons to pick at, and we promise them we keep it under an hour. We're going to get right to it. But real quick, I think, Joey, it's been phenomenal seeing you grow up. You know, Matt and I were both fortunate enough to play at an all-star game where you were featured in the skills comp with Steven Berger, and now to see you as the number one recruit in the country makes me feel old, but it's also a pretty cool feeling. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having us.
Mr. Bockley, you want to do the intros here?
Absolutely. So for those familiar, the Let's Ride is the old signature line of the Denver Outlaws, who always had their great battles with the New York Lizards that Coach Bellina was the GM of, an assistant coach of, head coach of. Fun fact, the Lizards actually never won a game in Denver, which is pretty interesting in all the years. It's a wild stat, that one that I am very familiar with, and very excited to give the bio for these two guys. So I'm going to start with Coach Joe Spallina, who is a Long Island guy through and through. Grew up playing there, I believe, Rocky Point High School. Alum, went on to play at Adelphi, where he was a four-year starter and two-time national champion as a player, and then became actually the women's head coach of Adelphi and won three consecutive national championships while he was there, and then took over Stony Brook in 2012, the same year that he took over as the Lizards head coach. Now currently coaching at Stony Brook, still having phenomenal season after season, bringing that program from nowhere to now a national powerhouse, always a top 10, top five, always in the mix for the national championship, just like they are this year. The women's national team assistant coach, I believe, since 2018. And then also coaching some of the most successful club lacrosse teams that were probably made famous by the World Series of Youth Lacrosse when we first got a picture of Team 91 Long Island that came out and showed the whole world how to play lacrosse. It looked like we were watching top-level high school guys that were just seventh graders at the time, even though I think Joey was a fifth grader and the leading scorer of that whole tournament. And you saw guys that are been the number one recruits, not just with Joey this year, but the seasons prior. So pretty special. Honestly, I have no idea how you found the time to do all of that and do it at a very high clip and extremely successful rate. And now Joey Spallina, a man that needs no introduction, high school senior, the number one overall recruit, committed to Syracuse, going to be wearing the number 22. And as we all know, that's probably one of the highest honors in all of lacrosse, not just college lacrosse. And a guy who I think I just saw recently had his 200th career high school assist. So just showing the ability to make the people around him better. I think there's no better thing that somebody could say about a player than he makes everyone around him a better player. So that's pretty impressive. Most people don't have 200 career points, let alone 200 assists just in high school. And I think right now you're averaging 11 points a game, which is kind of like what Mikey Powell did his senior year of high school. So pretty impressive stuff, really an incredible father-son duo. But we want to get started here because we know the family is much bigger than just the two of you. So, Joe, if you could kind of break down the rest of the Spallina family for us, we'd like to hear all about this amazing group.
Yeah, well, it starts at the top with the boss, my wife, Mary Beth. You know, she's the rock of the house. You know, she's my best friend. She's our support system here. So there's none better than her. So I think that leadership at the top is huge, and the support that my kids have. From myself and obviously my beautiful wife. And then my twins are juniors in high school. Both are committed to Cuse. Jake is a face-off midfielder. So he's a foso, as we say. He faces off, stays on. You know, he's a great old school two-way Stephen Pizer type, you know, run for days.
Great call out right there. Steve Pizer, yep. Absolute legend. That's the best, yep, of foso, if you will take that term.
So yeah, cool. For sure. And my son Brett is an LSM close defenseman, and he's also headed to Syracuse. So he's super athletic, two way. You know, get up and down the field. He can play down low. High IQ, great player. And my daughter Alexa is a ninth grader. She's crushing it right now, playing varsity for it's her second year varsity on nationally ranked Mount Sinai. So she's currently, I believe, leading scorer on her team. You know, those stats matter in this house, you know. So and then Liv is the head honcho of the house. So she's a 7 year old first grader. It's the one person in this house you don't mess with. You know, she's brutally honest with the boys. You know, if after a game, she'll tell them they were good, bad, or indifferent, you know, so she has no problem with that. And we have, two dogs, you know, we have Harley girl who's 4, and then we just got a puppy, 2 weeks ago, Oliver, he's a Bernedoodle. So, he's getting into all sorts of stuff. So if you see any sudden movements over here, he's on the prowl. So that's our squad. It's, we're a super close family. You know, lacrosse is obviously a huge part of our squad. But everything we try to do everything we can for our kids, my wife and I.
Well, I have a 2.5 year old Bernedoodle Murray, and he is the absolute man, greatest dogs ever. So great choice right there. And with Liv being the young one and me having a youngest sibling that's also a girl, I know the future is that she's going to end up being the best athlete and the best of them all just from watching everybody.
So no way.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Sounds like I'm sure Thanksgiving dinner is absolutely amazing with everyone competing against each other and talking about their stats and all that good stuff. I feel for the defender, right? Like, what are you going to argue about? I mean, how many ground balls you picked up. So I understand that argument. So that's great stuff. So for you, Joe, with your background in the coaching and winning an ML championship, winning championships as a player, what led you to women's lacrosse and getting started in the college game on the women's side?
Well, I was the assistant coach of the boys varsity team at Rocky Plaza, a school teacher prior. So I was a school teacher for 14 years. The man I coached with, an absolute Long Island legend, his son actually is a coach out in Colorado, Mike Bowler, you know, and, he was incredible mentor to me, and I was his assistant for 7 years. And while I was teaching, and the AD at the time had come to me and said, "Hey, I need you to take over." I was coaching varsity girls soccer, boys varsity lacrosse as Mike's assistant. And the AD had come to me and said, "I need you to take over the girls lacrosse program." And I said, "No, no way." I said, "I'm not doing it." And at that point, there was no out of bounds. There was just, you know, there was, and again, you know, even talk with young boys, they don't understand the game, the rules. And it's like, I can't do that. And, you know, we were kind of on that boys. My dream was to take over at Rocky Point. And when Mike was done on his own terms and, you know, and wound up coaching girls varsity, we were, I guess, won the county championship, I think 3 times in a row. And then I got a call on a random day from my athletic director at Adelphi, where I was a player, and he's like, hey, Joe, Bob Hartwell. And I'm like, how you doing? Mr. Hartwell was one of the best humans ever. He's since passed away. He's like, I want you, are you available this week? I want you to come in. I want to talk. He goes, it's not an interview. I'm offering you the job. I'd like you to come here and, you know, and think about it, talk about it. And so I took the trip in, and I was still teaching school. It was a part-time job. It was like, you know, $20,000 a year. That'd be the head coach at Adelphi. I live an hour from Garden City, so it was not ideal by any means. But at that point, I was like, you know, I kind of felt like I wanted to check out what it was like coaching college. You know, so I was a school teacher again, like I said, and then we won 3 national championships in a row.
How old were you when you? Sorry to interrupt, but how old were you when you took that Adelphi job?
Oof, how old am I now? 49, 12, probably mid-30s.
So yeah, you got into the women's college coaching game. I wouldn't call it late, but kind of unexpectedly and a little bit later in your career.
Yeah, probably young 30s. Yeah, I was probably like, yep, right in the, yeah. So it was later for sure. And I took a liking to it immediately because it was, you know, I looked at it more like the men's game, but with more finesse, where there wasn't obviously the physicality, a little bit more X's and O's oriented. You know, all the middies in women's lacrosse are two-way old school middies and the men, you know, the things we all clamor for on the men's side to bring back the two-way middie, you know, the player that does everything, you know, like, you know, so, and then I got a call after we won our third national championship in a row, from Stony Brook. I had a couple interesting offers throughout the years, but being a New York State employee and then being a New York State employee at Stony Brook, it had to do with me keeping my retirement and all those other things that nobody wants to hear about on this podcast. But but things that really factored into my decision. So I wound up getting that offer, and you know, it wasn't pretty when I went over there, but then the transfer portal wasn't alive and well like it is now, which I'm not a big transfer portal guy anyway. But at that instant, we had won our national championship that year. I think the closest game we played all year at Adelphi was a 12-goal game. So naturally, when the head coach moves 45 minutes down the road to the opportunity to go Division One, there were seven athletes that chose to leave Adelphi and follow me over to Stony Brook. And that kind of got Stony Brook up and going. The first year, you know, they were obviously not, you know, the year before I only had three or four wins. My first year we won off it. And we played at that time with like the number 8 ranked team in the country, Johns Hopkins. We picked them off. And the only reason I'm telling you that is since from that point on, we won that game, we've been in the top 20 since. So it's been pretty neat with a bunch of local kids, some kids that really, you know, have, you know, come with a lot of intangibles that even now to this day would stay true to our identity, and maybe some kids that flew a little under the radar and that leave not coming in as 5 stars, but wound up leaving as stars of the college game. And it's been that part of it's been a fun ride. And then, you know, to add a little action into it, at the same time I took Stony Brook women's team head coaching job, I was also offered the head coaching job of the Lizards. So I kind of got right into it. And I remember going to my AD. I'm like, hey, I just got offered the head coaching position of the Lizards. I'm like, he's like, are you out of your mind? I said, well, you kind of knew that when you hired me. And he's like, all right, can you handle it? I'm like, yeah, I can handle it. And wound up doing it. At that point, it was like, that was when everybody was jumping off the ship of the Lizards. And it was like, you know, Polanco was gone. Everybody was gone. And we kind of built it from scratch with Matt Gibson, Tommy Palisak. We had a bunch of young guys. And that was the year in the playoff run where you guys, you made my boy cry here in the stands when you guys had that miraculous comeback with the Outlaws, with no Brendan Mundorf and the broken foot. And you guys had a great run that year.
Yeah. And fun fact for you. I mean, well, one, you clearly in 2012 became the king of Long Island lacrosse. And I'm sure there's many people that would like to fight for that title, but the Spallina family certainly took the billing there. So Mike Bowler, I currently coach his grandson, Brian, at Cherry Creek High School. And you'd be happy to know his son, Brennan, coaches with me with Team 91 Colorado and has a great squad. And he's a great coach and fun to be around the Bowler family. But yeah, you clearly took over things there in 2012. And I know Pete wanted to dive into a little bit about when you did come over to Stony Brook. And like you said, I thought at first that Hopkins fact was just to take another jab at me, but turns out there was some pretty incredible meaning behind it. To be that consistent and get into the top 20 and stay there is truly impressive, especially at a program that wasn't enjoying any success before you got there.
Yeah, I think you're known as a passionate guy. You're known as an outside the box thinker, a guy that's not afraid of any kind of challenge, and also a coach that wants to achieve at the very highest. And so you look at what you've done at Stony Brook, you look at what you did at Adelphi. I'm interested in getting your perspective, and I think a lot of coaches would be interested in getting your perspective on how you recruit an individual that fits the institution that you're at. And then, so what's your recruiting philosophy? How's that kind of coincide with the culture you're trying to build? And then how your development of your players and the culture within the locker room has grown, and what are the things that have kind of pushed you forward in that department?
Well, I think the first thing we recruit is the person. You know, obviously the skills got to be there and all those things, but you know, one of the things you talk about culture, and I always say culture is about doing the little things right, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's. But at the end of the day, in the collegiate level, especially, you're not winning without a good locker room, and you're not even winning close, you know, unless you have that. So that's why I kind of, you know, speak with, you know, I'm not a big transfer portal guy. You know, I think that's like one of the things, you know, so because it just, it, you know, you want to take a player and you sit across from a family in your office and there's trust there. And you want players, young players, to know that they're going to come in somewhere and they have to pull, you know, and do a lot of the work themselves, but they have to know that there's a process involved. And when the time comes for them, that opportunity is there for them. You know, and we talk about it all the time. I have, you know, I just talked about it with my team last night. We have some great freshmen on our team and it's hard to crack the lineup. You know, I give the best player, offensive player on our team, or one of the top offensive players on our team, barely played last year. And now she's a mid-season first team All-American that just bought into doing stuff the right way, believing in the coaches, caring and loving the sport. You know, so while we look at skill, stick work and skills and athleticism, I, for me, it's more important to get to know the person and to see what's inside them. How much do they truly love the sport and what goes into being great? And I tell my own kids all the time, you know, like being great was easy. Everybody be great, you know? So it's like doing the extra stuff, doing the other things. And, you know, his senior quote is the man at the top of the mountain didn't fall there. And I send them my boys that all the time, you know? So it's something where we harp on with our players. And, you know, during practice, we're such a rep oriented, high volume, you know, program where it's impossible not to improve. You know, the amount of reps our players get, I tell my coaches all the time, it's like, we're coaching on the run. We're not huddling. We're not talking. We're going to talk, but we are going to coach as we're all moving. And it's going to be 2 hours of up tempo where these kids every day are going to get 1,000 reps. And they're going to do things where they develop an ability to be unconscious, high-level decision makers, you know, where there's no thought process involved and they're just playing and they're slinging and they're having fun. And we rep that, you know, and I think our dynamic it's wild. It's fun. Like, you know, it's something where I always say, like, I want my locker room to be a place that I would want my daughter to go and play in that team environment, be that way. And if it's not that way, you know, then I'm failing, you know? And that's where I say it all the time, like your evolution as a coach, 10 years ago, maybe even more than that, I don't know if I feel like I've evolved as a coach since I've had kids and I've had kids that are at the playing level and, you know, and knowing how important certain things are to them and being able to, you know, I probably was in my younger days, probably a little bit more of like a disciplinarian and like this way is the only way. And that ain't it anymore. That just doesn't work that way. And you have to, it's so important to tap into personalities and know what makes each player go, you know, even within my own kids. Like I have, you know, one of my twins, I have to headbutt, you know, and like, he's like one of those fiery guys who needs, and the other guy, I got to be like, hey, listen, we got to have like a real, you know, conversation. And this guy, I could have a conversation with from 70 yards away with no words, you know? So just, you know, we just have that thing. And, you know, my daughter is one of those ones where I have to, you know, before she plays, she's got to play with a major chip on her shoulder. And then it's lights out. You can go home. She's going to be, you know, in control. So, you know, just knowing that, I think that's helped me evolve as a coach and just has made our locker room better. Like knowing how to connect with a player, knowing how to get the best out of every kid, and knowing what makes them go. You know, I have some players that are like, coach, you got to get on me, man. I need, you know, like, and then some other ones, it's like, it's more of like, hey, we have a connection and we're talking and it's like more of like a relaxed, hey, next play, you know? So I think that's the way it is with those guys. You know, even that crush team we were talking about earlier today, those guys who are, you know, with Brendan O'Neill and Andrew McAdory and Joey and Xavier Arline is the starting quarterback at Navy, who's now playing, you know, lacrosse at Navy as well. All those guys, you know, like those guys are all different personalities, and you know, the screaming and yelling coach, it's any player's faces. I just don't believe that's the way anymore. That being said, like there's certain players, you know, you got to keep everybody in line with the program, and you can't have any people detracting from the goals of the program. And you know, I use the example all the time with all my teams. It's like if everybody in a team had a clear glass of water, you pour it in a bowl, the water's clear. If one person has a cup of dyed water and you pour it in that, you mix it in with the 45 other clear ones, all the water turns dark. So you can't have one player can't allow it. And that's a message that I really, my captains really buy into, you know, and they have, it's their room, it's their team, you know, and I'm there to guide it and coach it, but it's ultimately it's their team. And the more that it's their team, the players take ownership of the team. I think a lot of the other things that we talk about as coaches' goals, you know, they take a life of their own.
I think I'm going to steal that clear water metaphor for my squad, for my high school squad. And Joey, don't worry, we haven't forgot about you. I know we see you sitting there, but naturally we're going to make you talk about your dad here for a second. You know, you've had a guy, you've gotten to grown up that's been able to coach you, that you've been able to go watch coach. He's gotten you around professional lacrosse players. So guys that, you know, that are playing at the highest level, you know, so just kind of talk about the influence that, that your dad's played on your career, growing up as a coach, as a dad, and just the opportunity that's provided for you.
Yeah. I mean, since I was probably nine, I've been around pro guys and college girls and guys too. And, you know, just to be able to watch what they do on the field and even off the field too is obviously huge. But I mean, my dad has been he's just been awesome throughout my whole career. So I mean, you know, we've like you said, we can have conversations from, you know, a pretty far distance, and you know, we would be okay with it. And yeah, I mean, it's like there's just no other person that I would rather be with every day and talking about lacrosse and, you know, just talking about life. We went out to eat yesterday, and I don't think we talked about lacrosse one time. To be able to do that with him is awesome. But, you know, obviously to go back to lacrosse, I mean, just to have talks with him about, hey, maybe look at this move when you're going on a lefty versus a righty, and you know, just to be able to pick his brain every day is awesome. And you know, he's obviously a great dad too, so that also helps that out.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Coach Bolina, you've always been known as a family guy, and you know, that's pretty cool. You can turn it off and go out to dinner with your son and not think and really be present, which I think is something a lot of coaches have a tough time with. Being present when they're at home and being present when they're with their family, wherever they are, and not always thinking about that next practice, whether it's coaching or just work in general. I think that's a skill that's developed and not something that's easy. Joey, I'm interested in getting your perspective on you mentioned being around the pro teams, and I mean, I can't imagine how cool that is. Yeah. But being around the women's game as much as you have been, and you know, I'm just starting to generate a level of appreciation that I should have and probably should have had for a long time for the women's game, but you've seen it and you've seen it evolve over the course of the last 10 plus years. How's the women's game specifically maybe influenced the way you view the sport and maybe some of your personal development?
Yeah. And I mean, I've been around some of the greatest girls players ever, Kylie Miller, who's probably one of the best attackmen ever to play. I mean, she was just an absolute, she was sick. She just the BTBs and making defenders look like that they haven't played before. It's just to watch her play was awesome. You know, even not even girls on my dad's team, Charlotte North, she's sick. Some of the stuff she does is awesome. But just to be even not even on the field, but just how they act like off the field and with fans and kids and stuff is great to obviously watch, because that's obviously a big part of lacrosse and being able to connect with younger kids and obviously the future of the sport. But yeah, I mean, just to be around all great players is good, because you know, you can take something from Kylie, you can take something from Charlotte, you can take something from Allie Kennedy, who's probably one of the better midfielders to play too. But I mean, just to be around those types of players is just good, because you know, you can just pick off different things that they do and you know, obviously grow your game.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually went a few weeks ago, BC flew out to Denver to play against DU. And it was probably one of the coldest games ever. And I dragged my sister and my mom was in town visiting. And we went to that game that got changed. It got moved up to 1 p.m. because it was 12 degrees. And they actually canceled the game. They ended the game after the third quarter because it was just so cold. But I wanted to go watch Charlotte North play. I just wanted to see her take a free position shot and wind up and think about what it must be like for a goalie to see that coming or not see that shot coming. So I definitely know where you're coming from and being able to watch those girls play and the creativity that they have. Not very often, right? There's only one number one recruit every single year, that number one ranking, which I almost feels like you had, you were wearing that number one recruit since you were probably in fifth grade when everyone got to see you play on national television. It was just kind of known. Like I remember watching and then hearing that you were only in fifth grade playing against guys a couple years older and being like, what is going on right now? This kid's already has a skill set that I haven't seen before. So you've been wearing that number one for a while. So your recruiting process has got to be completely different than pretty much everyone else's. So kind of talk about how that went. What September 1st was like your junior year. I would imagine you're a guy that probably had to field some phone calls at midnight from some of those top people and going through that process, talking with all these different coaches. And there's tons of things you can look at when going through the process and what your determining factors and what it was about Syracuse when you went through that process to make that decision to go there.
Yeah. So I wasn't even home actually on the night of September 1st. We had actually that Midnight Mania tournament in I think it was like Philly. And I was taking phone calls while I was in the car, and I don't think I was like done with the phone until like, I think it might've been like one or two. It was definitely a long night, but I mean, it was honestly cool. Like, cause like me being with my dad and going to obviously a bunch of his games, I've seen not all of them, but like I saw at least a couple of them. So, I mean, cause like every college has their thing and like they're all obviously amazing, but you know, something that separated Cuse from them all was, you know, but just like the tradition and, you know, and the fact that like lacrosse is king there. Like, it's like, not like they're like the fourth sport or like the fifth sport, like they're like the first or second sport there, which is obviously pretty big for me being a huge lacrosse guy. But, you know, and just like all my favorite players growing up were obviously the Powells and the Gates and JoJo Marasco, who was awesome. And, growing up, actually, my neighbor was Tommy Palasek, who obviously went to Cuse, so he was always chirping me about going there. So, and there's actually a picture of me. I think when Cuse played, might have been Hopkins in MetLife Stadium. There's a picture of me and Tommy. But yeah, I mean, Cuse is obviously a great place, and you know, getting the opportunity to wear 22 is a dream come true, and you know, something that I've worked hard for. Since I was five or six, or I could, you know, even just think about going to play college lacrosse. But, you know, I mean, Syracuse is just obviously a special place, and I'm super excited to get there in the fall.
The September 1st night for him, he's downplaying it. It was a circus. It was wild. So Matt Kinnear actually wrote from Inside Lacrosse, wrote a great article on the night and chronicled it. It was, because we were in the car at midnight, and I obviously have a job as Division I head coach. So at the same time, I'm calling players.
Who's got the Bluetooth? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. So I'm on my phone calling players. At the same time, his phone is ringing. And then interesting thing about Syracuse is Coach Desco called my wife's phone, knowing that Joey's phone was going to have a lot of traffic on it. And got through right away. So, you know, and his situation was wild. There was every, you know, he got obviously all the top schools called. The nice thing for him and obviously for my wife and I was his decision would be based purely on the school that he felt was the right fit. It was not finance based stuff because, you know, all the offers were right on par with what the number one recruit, you know, would kind of be at. So that was nice for us because it gave him a chance where we just were like, hey. And there were times like he leaned on me, like, well, what do you think? I'm like, well, I'm not telling you because I don't want to be, I this needs to be your decision. And the nice thing with my situation, guys, and you know, like all these coaches I know. So, you know, from calling with the MLL with the draft and hey, you know, them telling, you know, what about this guy? What about that guy? So I had the chance to know a large, large majority of them personally. So I never felt any school on his list was a coach that I wouldn't want him to be around or play with. So, you know, and there are not most of, you know, everyone, they're all great guys, but I think when it came down to his final list, you know, with, you know, I'll talk this way. In Maryland, Virginia, Loyola was a school that was not originally there. And they were just so super impressive. You know, and coach, you know, North Carolina was right in the mix there. And obviously, you know, Syracuse and there were some wild things, college football coaches on the phone with him, you know, pro athletes that played at those prospective schools, pro football players.
Who was the coolest pro athlete you got to speak with?
Probably Mello. That was pretty sick how he kind of shouted me out and stuff. I thought that was pretty sick.
Dre Bly was the funniest.
Yeah, that also was pretty funny.
Dre Bly was the funniest. And then Mac Brown gave him sent him stuff and sent him a message, and it was neat. It was more of a football based recruiting because I think lacrosse coaches were forced to, because you couldn't do the in-person stuff, they had to go more of the football route where it was, you know, superimposed with him wearing different jerseys and being the next number, whatever it is at that school, and locker stalls with his name and picture and fake inside lacrosse covers with him shocking the world, choosing school X. It was wild. And honestly, you guys, it was so cool for me because I was getting all these great ideas. So then I was just flipping them and using similar ideas and then sending them to girls. I'm like, look at this. And, you know, we were like kind of reinvented. I'm like, you know, my assistant's like, where are you getting all this? I'm like, I'm like,
Joe's I'm a genius.
Yeah, exactly. So that part was sick. And then I remember that night, it was just like, you know, and remember it was during a dead period. So like we went to schools and we had to self-tour ourselves. You know, obviously you'd bump into some people on whatever it is, right? Like you happen to know somebody, like, you know, Rick Beardsley happened to bump into at Syracuse. So, you know, so they
still went there.
Uncle Ricky Beast.
Ricky the Beast.
Did he just stop you and start to show you how to throw super kayak checks? And you're like, dude, I'm an attackman.
It was even better than that. He just took us. He drove right through the center of campus with his truck.
Nothing that you would have told me would be surprising. He's a gem of a human being and super passionate about Syracuse. Well, I mean, I can't necessarily ask you too many questions about this recruiting process because I feel like yours potentially was so much different than everybody else's and the kids going through it. But what a unbelievable experience it sounds like that you had. And you know, it sounds like you were given great guidance but not pushed in any one direction. Can you elaborate on maybe what was so impressive about a Loyola? I mean, the Blue Bloods that you mentioned all stick out. I love Coach Toomey and Coach Dwan and Coach Van. I mean, they're awesome people first and great coaches. But what was impressive about what they did? And then, like, who did you have, like, a runner-up, like a concrete, if it wasn't Cuse, it was this school? Yeah.
Well, to start off with Loyola, I talked to Pat Spencer for, I think it was like an hour. Like, he was awesome. And like Coach Van too, I think almost every time we talked, I think it was for at least 45, you know, we would discuss offenses and like, what would you do here if you were in this spot and stuff. And it was like, it was kind of just like the way that they presented everything. And like something pretty cool that they did too was like, they called it like the Pat Spencer experience. And like, kind of like, basically we're like saying like this would be you, and like we would put you here. And obviously that was pretty cool that, you know, they had a plan and an idea for me if I, you know, if I was going to go there. But I mean, I didn't really, I guess, have like a runner up. I like everyone was kind of like every school was obviously a great school, but you know, like CUSE was just my first crush. You know, obviously you always got that first crush, and CUSE was them. And I mean, they were my favorite school since obviously Tommy Palsic was my neighbor. So obviously since I was like 7 or 8, I was always wearing CUSE gloves and shirts and hats and stuff. So yeah,
that's
we
great.
Knew honestly, my wife and I knew too, like, cause we rode shotgun and we were quiet the whole time. Every time we were on campus, we're like, hey, listen, we love the coach. It's a great situation here. If you feel like this is the place, this is the place. And the second we kind of started to walk through the campus at CUSE, I looked at my wife. I'm like, look at his face. Like, this is a done deal. And she's like, no, you never know. I'm like, man, I'm telling you, I know this is the, you know, I could just see the look in his face. His face lit up and, you know, and, you know, it was, I have one of my former assistant coaches at Stony Brook is the assistant women's coach there, Caitlin DeFleece. So we knew Defo really well. So, you know, we obviously did a lot of you know, homework there, and you know, them having the Falk Sports Business School was, you know, Jerry's been accepted into that. So a lot of those things kind of, I think it was kind of the perfect alignment. And, you know, a cool thing in our world, like lacrosse wise, there were a lot of, like, you know, Casey Powell reached out to Joey, Matt Rambo. He spent a lot of time on the call with him. He talked about, you know, Pat Spencer, Petey LaSala is an old neighbor of ours in Rocky Point. You know, his dad really well. So Joey spent some time talking to him. And then with Carolina, Chris Gray lived in the town over. So I think he was super informative. And, you know, so I think, you know, I mean, having some of those connections with some of those coaches, you know, and some of those players, you know, Ryan Doherty, you know, Maryland goalie was, you know, he was awesome through the whole thing too, which was, you know, just talking to Joey and stuff. So that part of it was great. I have to say they all were, especially Pat Spencer. None of them were, you have to go to our school. They showed him the respect, like, of just talking to him and just getting to know him and why he would be a good fit there. But none of them gave him, you know, put the, you know, the pressure on him to choose that specific place.
So I don't think there's,
you got it, Pete, you can go.
So I don't think there's anybody that's more qualified to answer this question than you, Joe. You know, being a college coach and going through it every day, every class, understanding some of the mistakes that parents, players make in their decision-making process or their behaviors in the decision-making process. I mean, you listen to Joey talk and it sounds like it was the best experience ever. I've been on the college coaching side of it. You hear kids are overwhelmed or stressed out. And I just, that doesn't jive with me because of the experience that I had. And I was calling coaches begging for them to give me an opportunity. So in having options and having resources surrounding you is what you want. But what are the biggest mistakes or some of the best things on the flip side that parents and players do in this process? Because the one almost overarching theme is that when you talk to a parent and you say, hey, how's it going? You know, how's the whole process going? How are you feeling about it? It's, they don't have any clue how to operate in the next few months. Some of them are way overbearing. Some of them are completely hands off. And I think that, you know, your personality is going to take over, but what are some of the common themes that you've seen and some of the advice that you'd give to some of the parents and players that are listening to this that are just starting the process or will be going through it over the next couple of years?
My biggest advice would be to just take your time. Like, I think, you know, everybody wants to hurry up and wants an instant decision for their, you know, I say the 6 hours of Instagram, you know, popularity where everybody they post their, you know, I'm committed here and everybody comments. And, you know, I'll tell you, even with Joey, like, we knew a lot. We did a lot of pre-visits. We knew that we weren't going to be able to meet with the coaches. So we started to kind of go through things. And obviously I kind of had the cheat code and just being involved in this, but like we took our time and there were a lot of kids that started to commit. And because of the scholarship offers that Joey had, he was quote unquote holding the process up a little bit for other places. Like, so he had an offers to these other schools, and obviously of large stature, and it was holding up the recruiting process. So I could tell you flat out, like, I received more than, and they weren't like nasty calls or anything, but like, hey, any idea when Joey's going to make his decision? Because schools are holding on him. They're waiting to hear what he does before they want to move forward. So, you know, and obviously I'm not giving into that. This was Joey's process. And if it was going to be a week, if it was his first visit, he's like, this is it. Like, obviously we'd make him take one more, but you know, it was, I think people just have to really wait. There's always a school that comes in that you don't expect. And for most kids, wasn't the case. There's a school that you really want to call that may not, you know, and this is the advice I give my 91 kids, you know, just be open-minded to everything, listen to everything, and, you know, talk to players that go there or have gone there, and, you know, get to know the coach, see what it's like. Get to know the student athletes, see what it's like. You walk around campus. So I think that's my biggest peeve, is that everybody wants to hurry up. You know, and I always say we live in a microwave society. Everybody wants instant, you know, and you got to breathe and let it absorb and stuff along those lines. But, you know, I think also people need to be realistic. You know, I've had plenty of people, like, I'll tell kids, hey, you know, give me a little list of possible schools, and, you know, and quite often the kids are a little bit not dialed in with how their skill set translates that. So, you know, being realistic and open-minded to those things. And, you know, you got 4 years, right? So, and you don't want to live in the transfer portal. So pick a school that you're going to be able to make an impact for a large majority of those years, and what fits you and your skill set, and how many kids are recruited in the classes before you at your position, and what kind of impact you can make at those places, you know, personalities of the coaches, stuff like that. Those are all huge factors.
How about amount of lacrosse being played, like in a specific summer? I mean, let's just say a parent wants to take their kid to every showcase imaginable. And are you in the camp of, like, the more you have in your stick in your hand, the better you're getting? Are you rationing that? And how do you ration it?
Show less, look better. I am, you know, it drives me, you know, so let's just use Joey as an example, because it's probably, you know, I'm talking about my own kid, not other people's kids, but he's a point guard. Like, he's an ex attackman. He can play off ball and finish. He can dodge. He's clearly can pass the ball. You know, a showcase is a showcase, which means when that ball comes down, it is a good shot. It's not going through X, you know, and it's certainly not coming back the other way. So, you know, I think certain players, like, I don't even love recruiting showcases. I like to see kids in their team environment. I will always talk to high school coaches and see how that player does in running a system. You know, how do they treat their man? Like, honestly, how do they talk to their coaches? How are they with the managers? Like, stuff like that, you know. But showcases, to me, I don't love it. We used to laugh all the time, because the first time he ever went to a showcase was the SDX one with Jake Reed. And after, like, the first game, he came off the field. He touched the ball like twice. He's like, "Dad," and I'm laughing. I'm like, "Pal, if you pass, you're not getting it back. You know, like, you got to understand what these." So then it turned into a joke. He's like, "All I want is a good fogo and middies that can't shoot, because, you know, they're gonna shoot. They're gonna go out the end line. I'll at least get to pick it up that way." You know, so. But I'm not. I like to see kids in their own environment. I like to see them how they run an offense. I like to see, you know, their ability to play within a system. And of course you want to see a showcase here or there, but I just listened to a podcast this morning on the treadmill, listening to just talking about how, you know, how the basketball showcases are, you know, and they can't really see if a point guard can really run a system, because it's, you know, every guy's trying to get the Instagram highlights and split two guys and dunk over somebody, where, you know, you get the center who wants to shoot threes. So, you know, to me, operating in a system, and that's where my job as a club coach is, to put a system in that allows the players to showcase well, but also gives the college coaches an ability to see kids functioning in that. You know, when you look at those crush kids, and, you know, with Brent, you know, those guys, and yeah, we could have ran any system with that group. So I'm not dumb to that. And, but at the same token, yeah, you know what, honestly though, at the same token, that was the thing, when you can see those kids who would shine at any showcase to be able to be part of the sum of all pieces, like, you know, and not be the guy, have to be the guy, and to watch, you know, these guys operate in a system. That to me was always more impressive, because if you separated them by themselves, like when they go to their own high school teams, they're the best player in the field, whoever they're playing with, right? But now to watch six insanely talented offensive players be able to play together as a group is why Tyler Cordes is starting at Syracuse. Brett Martin's playing at Hopkins. Brendan O'Neill starting at Duke. Aiden Denenz is starting at Duke. Andrew McAdory starting at Duke. Because those kids came in and they had such high level IQs because they can play real lacrosse, not showcase lacrosse. So I know that was a long-winded answer to my, but it's something I feel very passionate about. I like to see kids play in a system and show that they can play in a system and not be part of the meatball pandemic.
And with that, you're talking as a lot of that was as a club coach, as a dad, you know, take your time in the process. Is it the same message now put on your Stony Brook coaching hat? When you're recruiting players, are you harping on take your time, visit campuses, and also kind of with that, one of the biggest questions I get as a high school coach, as a club coach is, you know, a lot of times kids, they get invited to all these prospect days and they're younger, so they can't communicate really with that coach. They might not know if it's genuine interest by that coach or if it's come to campus, you know, to kind of fill up a prospect day type deal. What kind of advice do you have for those players, those parents that are trying to decide maybe which, how to figure out if a prospect day invite makes sense, if it's something they should go to, and you know, what does that kind of look like for you as a college coach?
First things first, we've never ever ever given a kid a deadline on a decision. You know, we'll make an offer, and listen, I've lost kids because of it, but I can't preach, I can't sit across a family and say, your kid's this, your kid's that, we want them here. But if you don't make the decision to choose Stony Brook by Monday, we're moving on. I just don't believe in it. I would, you know, I got to say this too. Joey had enormous offers from every school that you could imagine, and not one of them did that to him. So I felt even better about the way I've done business because it wasn't being done back. You know, and I always said that if that was my kids across the way, how would I feel if somebody put the squeeze on them?
Well, I mean, just, and I just want to, it's apples and oranges a little bit because you talk about the number one recruit in the country, unless you don't want, you want to eliminate your shot at them. But to do that consistently, regardless of where that player fits into your, on your depth, I mean, obviously they're high in your depth chart or your hot list, cause you want them to be a part of your program. But that was always my thought process too. When we were going up against another program that was putting a kid on a hot seat and they were feeling the pressure, it was kind of like, well, you're going to find out how badly they want you to be a part of their program if you just say, I'm not ready to make this decision. And so I commend you for that. And I think that's a huge piece that I would want every listener to kind of think about long and hard, because you want to pick the person that is going to look out for you. And I don't feel like you're already looking out for a kid if you're forcing them into a decision based on your timeline, as opposed to making sure that they're making the correct one for themselves and their family. So sorry to interrupt you, but I thought that was a great point you made.
No. And I one of the things to add to that too, and I've always said this in my assistants, you know, like it's, I try to mentor my assistants as well, no matter what. And like I said, I never, ever gave a kid a deadline, but there's almost a self deadline you put on yourself once you receive an offer. You know, like I remember even when the offer started to roll in, like he started to feel pressure. I'm like, buddy, it's all right. Like, you know, everybody understands, you know, you're very honest with everybody. You want to visit certain campuses before, you want all the information to make your decision. You know, so I think people just feel enough pressure and then you add to that, you know, and again, we're privy to the lifestyle, but you know, I'm so many parents I have to talk off the ledge and they got a call and they're like, oh my God, we have to make a decision this week. No, you don't. You do not have to. You know, I know the coach, he understands, you know, you're a 91 guy. He understands, you know, like you're important to him. He's important to you. Just take a deep breath, you know, and it's going to be all right. You know, so, you know, and then to get to the other part of the question with the prospect is, you know, I don't want to insult the way any programs do business. You know, there are a lot of prospect days that are fugazi, you know, where schools have their classes filled and they're running prospect days for a class that I know they already have filled. I don't do business that way. I'm an honest, you know, I like to be honest with people. I would never want, you know, if I'm full, I'm full, you know, if I missed you, I miss you. Like, luckily, you know, for us, it's, you know, where I was being like, you know, I think some of these things are that, you know, when you get over, you know, even like, if she gets more mail coming through hers about coming to this thing or that thing, I'm like, hon, you're a great player. You don't need to do any of that. Like, it's, and plus your process starts in a year and a half. So much can happen in a year and a half, you know, because at the end of the day, it comes down to the right coach sitting on the right sideline at the right time and you playing the right way. And it's love at first sight, you know? So, you know, I think a lot of those things, and I get it. Listen, I wanted my assistant coaches to be happy and to be able to, you know, and that's why we always try to make our prospect days so instructional, where kids leave there and it's not, you know, something where you're just rolling a ball out and they're playing. So we try to add that educational part to it. You know, so I'm, you know, it's that is always a tricky, slippery slope. I think that kind of stuff.
And something new, for collegiate athletes is now the business side of things with the NIL deals and what's happening there. I mean, it's talked about a ton with football this year, right? The Alabama quarterback was a millionaire without ever even taking his first snap as a collegiate starter. And Joey, we know that it's been publicized. You have some deals ahead of you that are pretty cool. We're going to let your dad talk a little bit more on the actual like specifics of them. But if you want to talk about maybe just name some of the companies and things that you're excited about that you're going to be doing moving forward as a college player.
Yeah. So, I mean, I obviously, I signed a four-year deal with Gate Lacrosse, which is one of the up and coming, you know, equipment suppliers. And, you know, I think that they're going to be the next big thing, which I think is going to be pretty cool. And then, another, sports training company is, Two Wolves Performance with Jack Kensel. He is a great guy. I've known him now for 4 years. And, you know, I've been training with him, and, you know, we spend weekends and hours and hours and hours of shooting. And, you know, just obviously he's been pretty big within the last couple of years of me elevating my game. But yeah, I mean, those are the two deals that we have going right now.
And that, I mean, that's pretty cool. You're a high school guy. You had a ton of publicity around you about your decision to play at Syracuse. And now, you know, you talked about getting into the business school at Syracuse. You're already learning about business and that side of things as a high school guy and going through it, which is unique. And you're definitely the first lacrosse player I've ever heard of in this kind of scenario, which is exciting for the sport in general. I mean, you've already done so much with just your play, and now you're going to be able to elevate the guys behind you, which is really cool. So if you could kind of talk about that a little bit more, some specifics if you'd like, or just kind of, you know, what that means in general and how that's changed you. You're now dad, coach, agent, just doing a little bit of everything. It's pretty unique and awesome stuff for the future lacrosse players out there.
Yeah, well, so Joey's situation, as this thing started to come to fruition and NIL being legalized, as far as New York State high school athletes being able to benefit from the name, image, likeness, you know, I asked him, you know, what's important to you? Like, what do you want out of this? You know, and he's gotten a ton of different offers, but I think ultimately the thing he stayed true to is he wants to be able to benefit from his name, image, likeness, but he wants to earn it, which was made me super proud. You know, as a dad, you want to make sure you're preparing your kid for life and being able to do things. So that's kind of the way our family is, though. It's like, you know, nothing, everything's earn, baby, earn. you know, so I think that speaks a lot to his character. So I love that. I think at that point, you know, he had gotten some different companies reaching out to him about representing, you know, different equipment lines and then different, you know, apparel lines and even like, you know, different things as far as like, you know, healthy foods and different things that they wanted him to put his name on. And, you know, we said, well, you know, we're not going to jump into everything all at once. You know, let's, you know, and the Two Wolves thing was first. And again, that was in Joey's ability to, number one, he has belief in Jack and the way he runs his company and his business as being a trained athlete, but then the ability to also to train kids individually and give back to the sport. And that's something he talks about, you know, all the time. And the equipment thing was, that was the big thing right out there. And at that point we were dealing with speaking with a bunch of different companies, and to my benefit, having history with the MLL and how, what player deals look like then. And then just helping Kylie O'Miller and Allie Kennedy negotiate their deals. Obviously post-grad, you know, that was, gave me a tremendous, you know, ability to do things. So, you know, upon Joey figuring out the right fit, there was obviously some scrutiny and people questioning why high school athletes would do this. And one of the most important things for me is the high school athlete has so much more leverage in the lacrosse world than the current college athlete. And how do I know that? Because I know that, I live it. You know, if a player comes to school A and they are sponsored by a certain company, that player has to wear that company no matter what. So why would a different company sponsor that kid? They can't wear it in games or in public. And why would the company that's already sponsoring that school make that player an offer if that player has to wear their stuff regardless? So Joey had tremendous amount of, obviously his game does a lot of the talking and people want him to wear their brand. So he had the ability to call a shot. He had leverage. You know, he had different major companies, and I'll only talk about, you know, obviously Gate Lacrosse was the one that won it, you know, one that, you know, put together the sweetest deal, but there were other companies right there looking to make a deal. When you have multiple people at the table and he can wear whatever he wants, that gives him leverage and an ability to put together a better deal for him. So that's really the way it all came down. And, you know, I think what separated Gate from everybody else was, I think their creativity, their cutting edge, you know, like just the way, if you even look and you talk about the benefit of him being around me is, you know, Gate Lacrosse is on the women's side has knocked it out of the park. And you see the innovation of the different lacrosse heads. And now as they're really starting to put resources into the men's side, the different heads, and they just came out with a brand new defensive head. What was the name of that one?
The can opener.
So it's actually wild. I have to show it to you. You'll this thing.
It's kind of like claws that that legit like grab onto the stick. It's actually crazy.
It's wild. So anyway, the innovation's there. So, you know, and then for Joey, it was more than just, he's not an equipment guy. Like he's going to wear the equipment, but it's more of like a belief guy. I believe in the company. He wanted to have an opportunity to make money and not just get gear. I thought that was great. That's where Gate came in and they put together the ability, you know, for him to have his own glove line. You know, and that's where Joey had worn these Adidas gloves for a long time. And people always took notice of the cuff and the way it was built. And, you know, and so I think that the ability for him to design his own glove line, and then they also offered the stick line, the signature stick head. Our MacBook is going dead. That's why he's running to get the charger. So, but the ability to get your own, you know, stick head and glove line, that was important because, you know, he's going to be able to get royalties and off of those design things. And it's a real contract. It's got substance in it and an ability for him to represent something he believes in, but also the company to reciprocate him believing in them, and ability for him to be able to make money off of that, you know, of you know what they got going and their equipment. And that was exciting for us. He was super excited about it, and that's where I think, you know, when you look at the leverage that the high school athletes have over the college players, you know, I know some of my crush kids that are certain schools, they don't have the ability to have a kind of deal that we were able to put together, you know, with Joey. And I think it's great for lacrosse in general. I think it's, you know, we always talk about everybody wants a sport to grow and to do things. And then anytime someone breaks out the box and does something that kind of raises the level, it's under the microscope and scrutinized and whatnot. So, you know, we don't mind that stuff. We understand, you know, what comes with that. And to me, my job is to support Joey as his dad, but also to guide him, you know, down the right avenue with the right people. And, you know, I think it was pretty cool at the convention where we went to the national convention and he's down there with Paul. And, you know, there was a lot of buzz about Joey signing his deal. And it was good. He works hard, man. I tell you, he does it the right way. And I could tell you, yeah, I'm his father and I'm a little partial, but I've never coached somebody more dedicated to doing the right thing and playing the right way and preparing the right way ever in any sport. And that's at the end of the day, as a parent, that's preparing him to be a great human and make the world better and have a great life for himself.
That's really cool in a lot of different fronts. But Joey, congratulations on such an awesome start to this, the rest of your lacrosse career and this next step. I know you got some things you want to accomplish this year but you got the stage set for you, and we're all looking forward to seeing how it plays out. I would be interested in, and your dad just alluded to it, how hard you work at this thing, you know, and you're signing these deals and everyone's the Instagram moments that everyone's, oh, this is awesome. That's awesome. You know, but what's your day look like? Like what are you doing to continue to improve your game, and what has led you to be able to execute on a field as well as you have that is giving you sponsorship deals and the number one recruit and all these things that people love to talk about?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I'm not in season, my training's obviously a little different. It's a little bit more intense than when I'm in season, but you know, when I'm not in season, we're up at the gym. We're up and out at 4:30. We're at the gym by 5. School starts at 7:30. So our mama always yells at us if we're, you know, a couple minutes late, but you know, it's the price that you have to pay. But yeah, I mean, I'm at the gym for an hour and a half before school. Obviously I go through school, and then after school, I go to my speed and strength guy, Justin Colley's probably one of the better trainers out there right now. And, you know, I'm with him for 2 hours a day. We do an hour of speed, an hour of strength. And, you know, most days after that, actually it's Tuesdays and Thursdays, I usually would have practice after that. So those are always the longest days. But when I'm in season, it's a little bit more, I guess, focused on like mobility stuff. So, I mean, I'm at the gym every single day, 4:30. So to me, my brothers and a couple of our friends come. So we got a good group. We call it the Breakfast Club, which is it's a pretty funny name. But yeah, I mean, it's honestly the grind. And, you know, like some days it sucks, but, you know, that's those are obviously the days that you got to get up and just do it. And, you know, those are the days that, you know, make you great. So.
What time do you go to bed if you're waking up at 4:30 in the morning?
It kind of depends. It kind of depends what I do the day before. It's usually like 9:30.
He likes you guys. He likes you guys right now. I'm just going to tell him. I'm going to say that he likes you guys.
I was going to say, we apologize for keeping you up, buddy. You got work to do. It's a big week.
Usually old man River's in bed by now.
Yeah. We appreciate you guys taking the time. With that.
Wow. Well, that's, I mean, that's incredible. And I think it's very important for the next generation to hear that you're not just waking up, showing up at practice as soon as practice starts with a stick in your hand and the things that you're making happen are happening. Like your dad said, you're trying to earn everything. And so far you absolutely have. And we're all excited. Everyone that's going to be watching you play for the next 15, 20 years, whatever it may be, are excited about not just watching you, but what you're going to be doing for this sport is truly incredible. So I really appreciate you coming on. Look forward to continuing to watch Mount Sinai this spring. And now I guess I'm gonna have to check in on the girls' side as well to see what your sister's doing. And obviously following Stony Brook, you guys are on a heck of a run right now. I believe it's what, 6 in a row. I know you have big plans for the Stony Brook program, and you're not just satisfied with being in the top 20 since the 2012 season. That, you know, the end goal is that number one, and excited to watch you guys make that happen. So truly impressed by everything that your family has done, and clearly it starts with the top. I'm not going to give Joe any more credit. It's clearly the missus that's running the ship there and making sure that Joey's in bed every night and making sure that he's up at 4:30. So that's, I mean, that's amazing stuff. And I really appreciate you guys coming on.
Hey, the last thing, we 2-on-2, we're thinking about bringing another father son duo on the Millens. Yeah. Who wins that match?
Obviously us. Obviously.
Okay. Where do you win and why do you win?
We are public school guys.
Public school guys for life, right here.
Public school guys rule the world.
You just won me over.
We got fresh haircuts. We don't have floppy hair. You know, those MIA guys are a little soft sometimes.
That's what we needed. That's the nugget. That's the soundbite we needed right there.
We love them. We love all those guys. But it's fun stuff. It's great. We actually saw Mark and McCabe down at the convention together, so we got to chat a little bit with those guys. So. You know, it's great. And same thing. It's pretty cool. The 22 class with Petro and Dom and Nick are good friends with Joey. And obviously Dave's going to be his coach. So we love them. And Coach Dwan and his son, it's that whole 22 class has a lot of father son duos that are right in there, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Well, always been a big fan of yours, Coach Polina and Joey. Love seeing your progress. So thanks for coming on, and look forward to seeing what both you guys do the rest of the season and beyond.
Thank you guys.
Have a great night, guys.
You too.
See ya.
Bye.